afternoon and good evening, wherever you are. Radio.
I want to welcome you to Blog Talk Radio.
Difficulties already from the top of the show. My name is Dr. Millie Lytle. I'm a naturopathic doctor. I'm a nutrition specialist, and I want to welcome you to the Fun Nutrition and Wellness Time. And I believe I have with me live on the air, Farmer Ron Eichner. Are you there, Ron?
Yes, I am, Doctor.
Great. Thank you so much. I've had some technical difficulties this morning, so I want to thank you for bearing with me as well. And for being prompt, and how are you doing today?
Doing very well. It's nice and sunny here, probably on the West Coast. I guess it's morning here, it's afternoon, and somewhere it might be evening. But doing well.
That's absolutely true. And so it's about 1:04 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're broadcasting to you live on this day, April 12th of 2015. And we're going to talk about, this is kind of a new thing that we have going on that we're trying out. It's, as you coined the term FUN, the Farming Naturopathic Wellness Hour, Nutrition and Wellness Time. And so we thought we'd get our heads together and talk about farming and naturopathic medicine because the two do go hand in hand. And we're hoping to educate the people out there who are listening on different health topics every time we come on. And I'm excited for this episode, where today we're going to talk about cholesterol and the benefits of cholesterol, as well as some myths and truths, and all sorts of different fun facts about cholesterol today.
Yeah. If I'd like to just add one thing, those of you listening that knows myself and our farm and the passion I have, well, I just want to say that Dr. Millie brings the same level of passion also. And it's basically two paths coming together, and we're kind of having a journey of health and wellness for everyone that cares to listen and follow the segments that we do.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And so you came on my episode of the Eating for Meaning Hour on Blog Talk Radio a few weeks ago, and it was really well received. We talked about wellness, and over the past couple years, we've been talking about wellness and different health topics related to people in your family and people in your community. And you've come to know my family, who lives in Western Pennsylvania. And so we thought we'd put our heads together and merge as a team.
Yep, so it's the old expression, let's have fun.
Yeah, exactly. Let's do it. And so, Ron, actually, you're the one that wanted to talk about cholesterol today. So do you have any thoughts to kick off to initiate the process?
Yeah, basically, cholesterol has always been, kind of interesting to me as far as it impacted our farm in a negative light. Eggs was a mainstay, and it still is a mainstay as far as for part of our diversified production, that it really took a hit back in the 70s and 80s and 90s and even, here forward, because, cholesterol is looked at as a C word, as an evil. And I think, in my view, the public's been duped to believe that cholesterol is an evil and that there's good and bad cholesterol. And this is what we're going to talk about in the program here. There's really just cholesterol, and it's they're both good. But when there's an imbalance, that's whenever, you can have, say, bad experience. So if you want to kind of take the point and on the cholesterol doctor and we'll move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So people do understand cholesterol as something that's bad, and overwhelmingly in our society we've been trained to believe that if you have cholesterol you need a treatment. And when really cholesterol is a normal and healthy chemical in our body that has a lot of important functions. And so cholesterol is only produced by animals. And so we being humans, we are animals, and we produce cholesterol just like every other animal. Plants don't produce cholesterol. Plants produce sterols. So plants produce something similar to cholesterol that we also need in our diet, but we need to eat the plants in order to get the plant sterols. And so this is a way of, Mother Nature working together, that animals produce one part of the picture and then plants produce the other part. And so this is something that I think a lot of people aren't familiar with, because when we look on food ingredients, and if it's, French fries or something, we think, oh, it's cholesterol-free and that's a great thing. But really, no, that's just a normal thing. It just means that there's only vegetables in there. And not all plant fats are good, just like not all animal fats are good. But cholesterol itself is a type of fat that actually is good, and it's actually a type of fat that our body makes. And yes, we do eat it from food every time we eat animal products. Certain animal products have more cholesterol than others. So eggs, of course, egg yolks have cholesterol. Shrimp and shellfish have cholesterol. Beef has cholesterol. So there's some products that are higher in cholesterol than others. But the fact of the matter is that cholesterol is something that our own bodies make, and this cholesterol serves an extremely important function in the body. In fact, it serves several functions. And so one thing that cholesterol does is cholesterol enables us to make protective cell membranes. So every single cell that our body generates, every moment of the day that your cells are turning over and regenerating, as you're growing, as you're trying to fight the aging process, you need cholesterol in order to protect your cells. So the outer capsule of the cell is made with cholesterol, phospholipids and cholesterol, and we need cholesterol for that. Particularly, we need cholesterol in the brain because that's where is the fattiest tissue, but we also need cholesterol to protect all of our organs. Now, cholesterol also serves some other purposes. It helps with the biosynthesis of our steroid hormones. And so if we don't have enough cholesterol in our body, then we can't make testosterone, we can't make estrogen, we can't make progesterone, we can't make insulin. And if we can't make any of these hormones, then we actually can't procreate. We actually can't live a normal life. We actually can't think and function. We actually can't regulate our blood sugar. Cholesterol also is important for the production of bile acids. So ironically, cholesterol is needed to break down dietary fat. If you don't have enough cholesterol, then you cannot, your liver cannot make bile that produces, that breaks down fats and turns dietary fats into fatty acids so that your body can use that, your liver can use that and make more cholesterol that's needed. And so it's really a cyclical part of human nature and human life in order to break down cholesterol that we eat so that our liver can make new cholesterol, so that we can make our cell membranes, so that we can support all of our organs, so that we can transport fat-soluble vitamins, because cholesterol is also important for making vitamin D. And so if we don't have cholesterol, then we can't make enough vitamin D. And vitamin D is important for our immune system and our bone health. It's important for our blood sugar control. And it's also important so that our body makes proper amounts of cholesterol, good and bad cholesterol, LDL and HDL. So I know you don't want to talk about the good and the bad of it, but, you know, as a practitioner, I do counsel people on how to lower their LDL if their LDL is too high and how to increase their HDL if their HDL is too low. And so, but you're right, it very much is a balance.
Yeah, and that's why I use the expression, you know, the public, in my view, has been duped on cholesterol, because you did a very good job of explaining, you know, the factual side of cholesterol. And if I can add, you talked about LDL and HDL, and the LDL is deemed what they call bad cholesterol, and conceivably the LDL is what transports is the cholesterol that is transported to your bloodstream, to your cells, and to your brain and your organs. And the purpose of the HDL, which, quote, is deemed the good cholesterol, it takes the extra LDL and other LDL cholesterol back to the liver to either be excreted or to be recycled. And in my view, it all comes into, it's all about balance. And as doctor said earlier also, that if your LDL is elevated too high and your HDL, there's ways to bring it into balance. And if I could, you know, pose a question, what is a good balance ratio, doctor, between LDL and HDL? Is there a percentage for the average person?
Well, you're looking for a ratio of about 2 to 3 to 1. You want more LDL, you need more LDL than HDL. It's hardly anybody that has more HDL than LDL. It's extremely rare. So generally, and there's a lot of argument in the medical community about what your LDL should be, but you want your LDL between 100 and 150. Now, some doctors will tell you under 100, and some doctors will tell you under 130. And it depends on the lab in some cases. So there definitely is a lot of room for speculation, but then there's a lot of room for different levels to be healthy, because it does come down to the ratio and as well as the total numbers. So whereas HDL, women actually have a higher HDL than men. Generally, women want an HDL above 50, above 55, whereas men want an HDL above 45. And so if you have a 3-to-1 ratio of LDL to HDL, then you're in pretty good shape, as long as neither one is so high. But some people have an HDL of over 75 and nanograms per deciliter. And if your HDL is over 75 nanograms per deciliter, then this actually means that you have a syndrome called longevity syndrome. And this is a syndrome that you want. So having high cholesterol, at least a high total cholesterol, could actually mean that you are poised to live longer than your neighbors if it's because of the HDL being high. And this is something that doctors are really not informing people of properly.
Yeah, and what I feel is, let's say 20 years ago, the medical community had a high level, combined level of 300, and now in recent years it's dropped to 200. And to me, it kind of plays into the medical community, you know, whether it's statins or whatever, to try to, quote, manage the cholesterol, because most people really don't know, or if they don't have a good diet or having bad eating habits, you know, it can create that imbalance where the LDL can really skyrocket and the HDL, you know, can't catch up.
Yeah, and so that would be a sign that there can be conversion problems along the way, and so there can be different areas of the body that the LDL does not get gets overproduced in the liver, but then the amount of HDL is underproduced, and then so then the HDL is not high enough to actually bring back the return fat to the liver. And so then you can get into this imbalance situation. It's just really not recommended to have a very low HDL. And unfortunately, statin medications do not elevate HDL. And so no matter how low you get your LDL, if your HDL is still low, then it's still going to cause a problem. So there's a lot of missing pieces in the cholesterol puzzle that people are not being counseled on. You know, there's no medications really that have been shown to safely increase HDL. And even in the nutritional world, it's difficult. Exercise is the best thing to increase your HDL. And it all comes down to the healthy functioning of your liver. It certainly doesn't come down to, for the most part, you know, what sources of cholesterol you're eating. It can come down to more how much sugar you're eating and how much starchy bread. And so part of the move from having a cholesterol to 300 to 200, I think goes part with the fact that metabolic syndrome is something that we're seeing such an increase of. And metabolic syndrome, whatever you feel about metabolic syndrome, and I can explain what that is, maybe in the next segment, but the fact that our blood sugar is going up, the fact that our cholesterol is going up, the fact that we're getting more heart disease, this reduction of LDL is a controllable marker that I think the medical community sees as something that they can actually control it and bring down risk for metabolic syndrome, but it's not really necessarily the case, especially not in otherwise healthy people.
Yeah, and to me, and my insight as far as on the statin side of managing cholesterol, it was created as a last ditch. You know, if you can't manage it through your diet, or if you have, you know, genetic markers that, you know, you have elevated cholesterol level, then you have statins. And I'm hearing people that their parents are on statin drugs, and they're taking it just to kind of hedge off, you know, all the bets as far as of cholesterol, and I don't think they really understand the true facts of cholesterol and purpose of it, and even a lot of times the side effects, which we might get a chance to discuss of what the statins can do. But, you know, one thing, Doc, you were saying about the liver as far as with cholesterol, and it's really, there is a few ways of supporting the liver, and one way is detoxification to help the liver do its function. And we're all exposed to so much on a daily basis, and it's not that hard to detoxify. I don't know if you'd want to just kind of enlighten the people on that aspect.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, so if you're busy looking at just the numbers, just the cholesterol numbers, without considering your overall health, then really it's like you're only looking at your, you know, it's like you're looking at your finger to discover why you have elbow pain. So you really need to look at the whole body, and really that comes down to the liver and how the liver is functioning in order to get a good grasp of why your body's making the cholesterol that it is, and whether it's, you know, a lot of it LDL and not enough HDL. And certainly high triglyceride levels and high sugar levels and high insulin levels and having central obesity are really increasing risk for having cholesterol and heart disease. And that does have to do with how much the liver can bear. The liver has so many functions already. It's already the main organ of detoxification. And so it clears out all waste products. And a lot of these waste products are fat soluble. And so old hormones are fat soluble. So if our, you know, our body has to make estrogen and make testosterone, but our body also has to metabolize those hormones once we're done using them so they can be recycled or put out in our stool. Any environmental exposures we come in contact with, whether they're pesticides in our food, just normal levels of pesticides in our food, whether they're hormones that we're eating through animals or even synthetic hormones that we're ingesting through plastics and bleach products and even cigarette smoke, and all these things are making kind of fat-soluble toxins or residues in our body that our liver is really responsible for getting rid of. And if our liver is sluggish or slowed down, then we can't relieve our body of excess waste products, especially excess fat. And cholesterol is one of the fats that we need to get rid of. It needs to cycle. It needs to spiral around. It needs to be produced, and then it needs to be degraded in terms of the bile acids. And so whereas statin medications, unfortunately, I think they slow down this whole process, and they kind of put a spoke, or, you know, they put a wrench in the wheel, in the spoke of the wheel, and slow the process down. And so you're exactly right, and I'm taking a long time to get around to that, but even just by consuming bitter foods on a daily basis, then we're helping to detoxify our liver. Our liver really responds very well to lemon and beets and leafy greens and green apples, and these are just daily dietary detoxification that we can do just to get our liver functioning properly, to help our bowel movements, to ensure that our bowels are moving regularly, because it's also through our bowel movements that we release excess cholesterol. If you're wondering why rice bran or oat bran has been shown to lower cholesterol, it's because they actually help get rid of excess cholesterol that really should be taken away in the stool. So people who are constipated are much more likely to have high cholesterol. People who are constipated are also much more likely to have high blood pressure, and they're also much more likely to have obesity. And so this is where this kind of normal functioning of the body, we can just help our body function normally and look at the whole big picture. Now, in and above just dietary detoxification, we can certainly take some herbs like milk thistle and dandelion, yellow dock, certain herbs like that, bitter herbs to help us detoxify. Even black coffee is a liver detoxifier because it's a bitter principle. Even green tea is a liver detoxifier because it's got a bitter principle. So all of these bitters help to detoxify the liver. And then in and above that, it's all the precursors to an antioxidant called glutathione, so alpha-lipoic acid and N-acetylcysteine for any of you who have some dietary supplement knowledge. N-acetylcysteine and methionine, so MSM, or even some of the B vitamins can all help with increasing glutathione so that our liver is generating antioxidants that reduce inflammation, protect the liver cells, and protect the liver function.
We as a society and people, I think, you know, we can be creatures of habit. And it really comes down to choices. And I know you do something right away in the morning. You take a little bit of lemon water. I do apple cider vinegar. Would you just want to explain just briefly, Doctor, as far as, you know, how the benefit of that, and if a person would just the first thing they get up in the morning, look in the mirror and say, boy, I gotta take a little lemon. Would you want to just expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So lemon is a sour, bitter food that causes the liver to squirt bile. And so what these bitter foods do that I mentioned, and apple cider vinegar is one of them, lemon's one of them, dandelion root, and then these green leafy vegetables, your arugula and your kale and your lettuce, all your salad greens, all of these things cause the liver to squirt bile. And so as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, every time our liver is squirting bile, and having the gallbladder concentrate it, then it's using up the cholesterol that it needs. So it's essentially detoxifying cholesterol from the liver, and it's allowing and facilitating for our body to break down more fat. And so one thing that lemon water does first thing in the morning is it helps the liver to release bile, which breaks down fat. It also initiates the bowel movement, and especially if you have it with warm water, then the portal circulation, liver circulation responds to warm water, relaxes the tissues, oxygenates the tissues. From a flavor perspective and from an alertness perspective, taking bitters first thing in the morning is just a great time also. It just makes you feel alert. So even, you know, whether you have a coffee or don't have a coffee, or have a tea or don't have a tea, having lemon water, apple cider vinegar and water first thing in the morning really helps you wake up, perk up. And it really allows your kidney and your lymphatic system to flush out and really get rid of all the toxins that formed overnight. So it's overnight really when your body is healing itself and detoxifying. So first thing in the morning, you want to flush all that right out.
Yeah, and that's the first thing I do in the morning is just take a little apple cider vinegar and a little bit of water. And if you don't say wow, your body's saying wow, you know, and that mm-hmm. does, you know, snap you up. And it's these little tricks or trump cards that if people can build into their habit of, you know, how to start the day or how to go through the day, all these little things truly do add up to managing the aspect of cholesterol. And when you're doing that, then you have, it enhances health and wellness.
Absolutely, yeah, because the goal is really to make your body function well. And, you know, I'm always reading skeptic reports about detox and what the skeptics are saying about this and that, just looking for some good argument. But they really never have one because they don't ever really consider that, yes, the body does all these things normally, but if you're not facilitating, encouraging the body to do the normal functions, then the body's not going to function normally. And so it doesn't just automatically do it. If you've been really suppressing the body's ability to function normally for 10, 20, 30, 50 years, then it's likely not going to function normally, even though you have all the equipment necessary. So you really, it's just like anything. You have to get your body in shape. You have to keep your body in shape. You have to do these small things. These small things are really what contribute to health. Everybody's always asking me, what do you do for weight loss? How do you lose weight? Or just on a personal level, how do you stay so thin? And I just do small things. I'm not at the gym every moment of the day. I don't have time. You know, I take the opportunity to go out and walk, and I exercise, and I do stretches in the morning, and I drink my lemon water and lots of fiber and lots of vegetables. And when you do all of that, you don't have to worry about how many eggs you're eating. Because I eat two eggs a day, you know. And so you don't have to worry about how much eggs you're eating or whether you're going to eat red meat or not. So for most people. So it really does have to do not just a balance of cholesterol, but the balance of your body's behaviors.
Well, like you were just saying, you know, just with exercise and moving and such, and you gave me a quick cell phone call this morning, and as an example, you were walking to the clinic, a 15-minute walk, and a lot of times people, they don't want to walk 15 steps or 150 steps. They'll jump in their vehicle. And the best thing that you can do is just the example of how you went to the clinic this morning. You just allow that time, but you also then factor in what's the benefit of doing that walk instead of taking that drive.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm always a person who's looking to conserve time, to generate energy, or to generate good energy, conserve bad energy, and save time. And actually, what I feel like, even though most people would say, what are you crazy? Walking doesn't save time. Well, yes, actually, walking saves me a lot of time because it means that I get to enjoy nature and breathe in the air and have a mindful stroll. But then I also have a destination that I have to come to work and I have to see patients today. So it allows me to enjoy my day or enjoy part of the day before I spend, you know, the rest of the day indoors. So I encourage everybody, and even if you live in the country, and, you know, I live in Brooklyn, so there's places that are walkable. But, heck, you know, I live in New York City, and so there's a lot of places where I have to drive or take the subway. So the same thing, if you're living whether you're living in an urban area or a suburban area or even the country, You can always walk to get mail. You can always walk to the grocery store. You can always walk to the wellness farm. You can always walk to your neighbors. And you can choose to walk and factor that into your day instead of driving. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's almost like you were saying, you know, taking a walk and enjoying the walk. It's like the old expression, you know, standing back and smelling the roses. You know, there's it takes a little longer to walk to work than drive a car, but the other benefits of that, and when you put it in that perspective, it's just an element of time, you know, the time of the day.
Yeah, and it increases the quality of my life, and it increases the quality of one's life to, you know, not just drive by the roses and look at them, but actually get out of the car and stop and smell them. So it's the same thing. If you actually spend time looking at the trees, you know, that is meditation. That is mindful meditation. There's scientific studies that show that people who look at trees, spend time looking at trees every day, have less anxiety, less depression, and feel better about themselves and feel better about, you know, have a better outlook. And so nature is therapy.
Yeah, and you know, we're talking about detoxification, doctor, and if you maybe want to just chat a bit about NAC and, you know, the role that it plays, you know, in detoxifying, and also, you know, a few other benefits that it offers.
Yeah, so I mentioned glutathione, and so I'll just back up because I never like to answer a question directly, but glutathione is the body's main antioxidant, the liver's main antioxidant. It's called the mother antioxidant. And essentially, the liver has six main functions, but one of the big functions that the liver has is to take chemicals that are circulating in the body and then in the bloodstream that the body no longer needs, and cholesterol is part of this. And any medications that you're taking, ibuprofen, Aleve, birth control pill, anything that anybody's taking on a daily basis, even food, even the pesticides that are in food, or even the actual extra nutrients that are not needed by the body, the liver has to break that down. So it's called first pass. The liver has to check the food and every other chemical for what's in there before it allows the rest of it to go on through. It's like a filter. And so the liver has to do these steps of detoxification once you're done using it. The liver does phase one detoxification, which is a process by which we take the chemicals in the body and we make them actually water-soluble. Now, normally when the liver makes these chemicals water-soluble, it's actually making them more harmful. So then it relies on phase two detoxification, which neutralizes the chemicals and takes them from a water-soluble, more harmful place to being packaged up into safe, either inert or fat-soluble substances so that the body can get rid of them, usually through the stool, but also through the kidney as well. And glutathione is the main antioxidant that does that. And so there's a few different amino acids that help with the production of glutathione. So glutathione is very, very important. It's very important that we have enough glutathione, and this is actually a key to good health, anti-aging, and regulating your cholesterol. And so NAC is the long term is N-acetylcysteine. So it's a cysteine-based amino acid peptide, which are the building blocks of protein. That's what amino acids are. So it's a more or less singular component of a protein, but it's the rate-limiting nutrient that makes glutathione. So your glutathione gets made based on a few different vitamins and amino acids that are present, based on methionine and alpha-lipoic acid, and as I mentioned, B vitamins and sulfur components as well. N-acetylcysteine is a sulfur component, but the liver will make as much glutathione as the NAC lets it make. And so the more NAC you have in your system, the more glutathione can be made, the better your liver is at detoxifying, the better your liver is at breaking down these harmful waste products, forming your stool, getting rid of them. And NAC has several functions, actually. So even just aside from making glutathione, it's actually a wonderful anti-inflammatory, and it has the ability to break up mucus in the body. So for people who are suffering everything from seasonal allergies where you're producing mucus, or if you're suffering, if you drink milk or orange juice or any food, if you get mucus, or even if you have acid reflux and you get mucus from in your throat after you lay down all night, then NAC has the ability to cut this mucus. So it's actually wonderfully supportive for the chest and the lungs, also for the throat. It's excellent for the colon as well, because it also gets rid of harmful chemicals, and it can be therapeutic for breaking down these chemicals in the liver so they don't go back into the circulation. So it's protective against cancer, protective against things like leaky gut syndrome, where our body's not able to filter out bad proteins, and so they re-enter our bloodstream and they give us things like eczema and psoriasis and autoimmune conditions and migraines. NAC is also excellent for the brain. It's excellent for the eyes. It helps to repair eye structures, so it's good for macular degeneration. It's good for tired eyes and vision problems. So many benefits, Ron. It's good for almost every organ system of the body.
Yeah, and NAC really is inexpensive. You know, I mean, it's a supplement that costs, in my opinion, a little bit of money, but the benefits and you were saying, doctor, about, you know, the supports the strength and of the eye and such, and you're hearing more and more, you know, macular degeneration, but most importantly, cataracts, and it's happening in you know, ages younger than what it was 20 years ago, meaning cataracts. But a lot of times people, you know, that they accept the fact that, well, this is all part of aging. Well, yeah, you know, each year it adds to one's age, but, you know, that's why, you know, sometimes people age a little more gracefully, you know, than others. And, you know, we're trying to do here with this, the information we're bringing forward is to try to support a foundation and a learning process and, you know, build off of that.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you've mentioned cataracts, because cataracts are actually one of the side effects of cholesterol medications, the statin medications.
Right.
So maybe we want to talk about those.
Yeah, and you know, with the glutathione, you know, back to the NAC, helps produce more glutathione, and if you don't have the NAC, your liver can't excrete as much. And I do think that as one gets older with age, you know, these are little elements like NAC to help produce the more glutathione. And as you said earlier, all the benefits that glutathione has, it just, you know, starts to enhance, you know, balance, health, and wellness.
Yeah, absolutely. And so NAC is extremely cost-effective. It's really one of the best, biggest bang for your buck when it comes to supplements. It's $10 to $20 a bottle, and that's for 500 to 600 milligrams a capsule. And you can take anywhere from 1 to 6 capsules a day. NAC is also protective against radiotherapy. So if you're getting radiation as a chemo treatment, or if you're getting a CT scan for diagnostic purposes, NAC is also an emergency room drug that spares the kidneys. So oftentimes from contrast dyes and other imaging, contrast imaging scans, which involve radiation and contrast dye, kidneys can break down, and people can die of kidney failure. And NAC is actually an emergency room drug to save the kidneys. It's also the antidote to Tylenol and ibuprofen toxicity, ibuprofen and Tylenol poisoning, which kills more people per year than you'd expect. So, yeah, I mean, it's amazingly therapeutic. It really helps to metabolize chemicals.
Hey, on the topic of cholesterol, there's serum cholesterol and dietary cholesterol. Would you want to try to just explain to the audience, you know, briefly the two?
Yeah. So as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we get cholesterol from our food. So anytime we eat animal products, all animal products have cholesterol in them, because animals produce cholesterol just like human beings do. And so when we eat cholesterol, then it gets broken down by our digestive enzymes, and it gets broken down by our bile acids, and it gets transferred into fatty acids. It gets broken down into chylomicrons and then fatty acids, and then it goes to our liver so that it can be used. And so the cholesterol that's found in the food that we eat doesn't automatically make cholesterol in our blood. So some people do think about that. Now, it can definitely impact it in some people, and it would impact it in many people, but not all, especially not people who have familiar hypercholesterolemia. Sometimes if they reduce their cholesterol, it still doesn't matter. The liver is always taking whatever available fats it has and making cholesterol out of it. And so the dietary cholesterol, that's the kind of source of the dietary cholesterol, comes from the food that we eat. Whereas serum cholesterol means blood. So that's the blood test you get when you go to the doctor and he checks your cholesterol. They do fasting cholesterol just in case you've eaten any foods with cholesterol, and to kind of establish a baseline so that the dietary cholesterol does not get mixed in with the serum cholesterol, which is more or less a stable value over a long-term period. Cholesterol does change every 6 to 12 weeks, stress cholesterol levels, depending on, again, liver health, you're on medication, how much cholesterol you're eating in your diet, et cetera. But the serum cholesterol is really what's been already produced by the liver. Now, the cholesterol that's in your blood that's getting delivered to your brain cells and to your myelin and to your all the cells of your body, that cholesterol is not in itself necessarily dangerous unless somebody already has artery problems. And so somebody who already has arteriosclerosis or already has blockage of the arteries or plaquing of the arteries or hardening of the arteries, somebody who already has a heart disease, coronary artery disease, does have a bigger risk for having circulating cholesterol, because cholesterol, being a fat, can attach itself onto any of those lesions, so to speak, in the arteries. And so if you think of your hand, if you were to get burned, then a scab would form. And so that scab also forms in the arteries if you don't have enough beneficial nutrients in order to protect the health of the arteries. And so free radicals can float on by into the blood and break and cause tears or rips in the arteries. And actually, if people who do not consume enough fruit or do not consume enough vitamin C, they tend to have, or just antioxidants in general from your dark purple berries and your citrus fruits and your spinach, people who don't consume enough fresh fruits and vegetables tend to have more lesions in their arteries. And if you have lesions in your arteries, then cholesterol that's going in the bloodstream, circulating in the bloodstream, can get caught and can start forming a scab at your artery wall. But then the whole process does rely on inflammation to be generated. There needs to be inflammation there. Your body is trying to fight the lesion. It's not trying to fight the cholesterol. It's trying to heal the lesion by producing free radicals, so peroxynitrates or hydrogen peroxide, different things that scavenge debris and bacteria and viruses, making sure that it's sterile. And in trying to do this healing response, it's actually creating scabs. It's actually taking the cholesterol, damaging the cholesterol, and that's what forms the plaque. So it's this whole process. It doesn't just have to do with how much cholesterol you have. It has to do with what the health of your arteries are and what your overall health is.
At our farm market, quite frequently, we get asked, since we have, as I deem, the freshest eggs in the North Hills, we're just north of Pittsburgh, people will be talking just about eggs, and whenever it comes to they question me how many eggs I eat a day or how many a week, or my dad, you know, the amount that he would eat. And the first comment that is you know, they're just stunned the amount of eggs we eat. The first comment is, oh, my God, how's your cholesterol? You know, and that's where I said early on, you know, eggs have really been wrapped into the cholesterol, and realistically, it really isn't the egg it's a problem. The egg just became the target, and it is what it is. But, you know, maybe in a future topic, I think, you know, eggs and a nutritional value will be something that will be discussed, and we can have some fun with that.
Yeah, well, people have actually started to equate eggs with cholesterol. They think it's one and the same almost.
Right, and that's where, you know, the deeper of the duping, if you will, you know, it's whenever cholesterol came into play and the eggs became the target, and eggs are very much a mainstay, at least back in the day, for breakfast, because that's how people were reared. Well, if you can take eggs off the table and factor it in with cereals or other carbohydrates or whatever, there's a benefit of taking one staple off the table and supplementing with another. But, yeah, it's amazing how, you know, a four-letter word like eggs comes into play whenever you talk cholesterol, or if you mention eggs, cholesterol comes into play. They go side by side. And what, as far as managing cholesterol levels, as far as, you know, with our diet, you know, you talked a little bit about it earlier. Would it be like a percentage balance like, let's say, for a lunch or dinner, a salad, a couple of vegetables, you know, protein and a source of a little bit of meat? Would you have a little, could you expand on that, Doctor?
Well, I mean, the diet that I recommend, and I do try to recommend an individual diet. So lots of people out there are struggling with food sensitivities and are struggling to determine maybe some of the source of some of their health problems, and, you know, get rid of the sugar and get rid of the flour and get rid of the gluten, or some people are vegetarian, et cetera. So people are doing a lot of different health experiments on themselves. So I do leave a lot of room for that individually, because I certainly don't think that one diet is right for everybody. But generally speaking, I do say that, you know, the Mediterranean diet, or something similar to the Mediterranean diet concept, is really a good set of dietary guidelines to follow. And what that means by the Mediterranean diet is that you have a variety of foods which are smaller in portion. So instead of having like one big plate of pasta with tomato sauce, then you actually have maybe a small plate of pasta and then an equal amount of fish or beans or meat or eggs or protein on the side. So that makes a happier plate is going to be with your carbs and proteins. So it would be more precisely a quarter of your plate is your carbohydrates. So that's your potatoes and your pasta or your rice or your quinoa. And there's certainly lots of variety, and there's a spectrum of whether it's ideal kind of carbohydrate, which has fiber, or a non-ideal kind of carbohydrate, which is processed and doesn't have any fiber or minerals. And then a quarter of the plate is protein. So a quarter plate carbs, quarter of the plate protein, and then half of the plate vegetables, which means two or three servings of vegetables at a minimum. That's green vegetables, whether you're yellow, red, or orange vegetables, per meal. Some people like to eat vegetables for breakfast. Most people don't think that breakfast is a big time for vegetables, although I certainly can attest to the fact that salad is excellent at breakfast. Having a vegetable soup is an excellent breakfast food. Having a green juice or a blended drink with avocado and some other greens and some flaxseed, et cetera, a protein shake of sorts, is also excellent at breakfast. So you certainly can eat vegetables at breakfast. So you want to really load up on the good stuff. You want to load up on the vegetables. So 7 servings total per day is what you're striving for with vegetables. With fruits, you want 2 to 3 servings of fruits per day. If you can't do them fresh, then do them frozen. And otherwise, you want to eat protein at every meal. So whatever the source, you want it to be the best source possible. It can be a vegetarian source. It can be an egg source. It can be a dairy source. Or it could be an animal or fish source. But at least 20 grams of protein at every meal. And then some good carbs. So some whole grains or some boiled potatoes or you know, pasta every once in a while. That's what I say is that's the ideal diet, and then including snacks. So, which are preferably trail mix or fruit, or you know, you could have a boiled egg, or you could have a salad or a small salad or a piece of fish on wasa crisp bread, you know, wasa crisp bread or something like that. So that's really the diet that I recommend. and trying to include as many fresh herbs and spices into the diet as possible, because you always want to increase your nutritional value of your food. You can have fish and potatoes and greens, and that's a great meal, but if you add some turmeric on top of that, or if you add some cayenne pepper on top of that, that gives it extra color. That extra color and flavor actually translates into extra anti-inflammatory, pain-relieving, antioxidant-promoting, artery health, you know, lots of good stuff. So, and cinnamon at breakfast, so try to get your spices in there too.
Yeah. Earlier we were talking a little bit about managing cholesterol, like with exercising, and you made a comment about, not going, you know, when we say exercise, it's not about going to the gym or not having time to go to the gym. And basically, in my view, just on a daily routine, there's a lot of things that you can do to push oneself to do things, or just the way you twist and turn and up and down, you know, you can induce body movement is really can be blind exercise, and it helps the body immensely.
Well, one of these books I plan on publishing down the line is called Invisible Exercise. And so you're certainly right. You can call it blind exercise, invisible exercise. But if you think back to, you know, how your mother exercised, vacuuming, stretching up the cupboards, cooking, or how your dad exercised, shoveling, or still does, baling hay, or, helping people jack up their cars. Any kind of movement is exercise. Now, ideally, in order to have improved cardiovascular health, then you're having sustained exercise where you're elevating your heart rate, for those of you who count, above 100 beats per minute for a sustained period of time, which is 20 to 30 minutes. Now, you know, another goal to strive for is that you actually break a sweat. That's nice because that's detoxifying, and that really sort of gets rid of toxins as well through the skin. And but you want to be breathing hard, but not so hard that you're going to injure yourself, and you just still want to be able to carry on a conversation. You know, if you're really doing diligent exercise, you put a sprint in there so that you're sprinting for 30 seconds to a minute, and then you're walking again, and so you can do some speed walking. But yeah, you're right. Any type of movement, twisting, turning, dancing, hula hooping, yard work, housework, anything is exercise. It's all good for you.
Yeah, and then sometimes instead of, you know, one, delegating to somebody, hey, get me this, if you get it yourself, you know, you might be doing some extra steps that it can have benefit. I'm not trying to say not to delegate, but, you know, there's a lot of different ways, and I always use the expression, one of the worst things that was ever invented was a clicker for a TV, you know, because before you had the clicker, you know, in order to change a channel, you got to get up and turn the dial, and there again, that's a little, you know, invisible or blind movement that all comes into play.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but you know, the healthiest cultures in the world, there's a handful of kind of, people like in the Andean mountains and Himalayan mountains, there's a handful of cultures of people who live the longest and the healthiest. So they don't develop any chronic disease. They live up until their 80s and their 90s, and they're free of arthritis, and they're free of diabetes, and they're free of cancer. And those communities certainly don't go to the gym. But what they do is that they get up and sit down a lot, like 50 times a day. All they do is get up and sit down. So they're going from this kind of squatted or seated position to a standing position, doing some walking and then coming back again. And so just really simple body movements can actually have a really big benefit. Again, it's the point that you made before. It's small things to improve our health, taking the stairs, taking the escalator, not the elevator, walking to the post box instead of driving. And you know that if you're making the decision to drive, you know that you're making the decision to drive. So it's not people that, some people know that they're not making the decision not to be healthy. You're choosing not to be healthy. And so what Ron and I are saying is, you know, flip it around. Choose to be healthy, because the results will really pay off. You don't have to focus on weight loss so much if you're just making these small steps. You don't have to focus on your cholesterol so much if you're just taking these small steps. And no matter what bad you're doing for your body, this is, I counsel my patients on this all the time, no matter what bad things you're doing or what bad habits you have, you can always improve your health or maintain your health by doing good things. you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to live the lifestyle of a monk or of a naturopathic doctor or of Ron Eichner, the healthiest person you know. But you have to do better than you're doing, and you have to do a little bit more in the way of deciding to do some healthy things every single day, deciding to do some things that are going to work on your health.
Yeah, I always like to kind of, you know, have fun with my customers and set up a little tease. And if I could set up a tease in the future, God willing, what Dr. Millie and I can bring to the audience is basically the topic of inflammation. And the point I just want to make in this tease of inflammation, there's people getting joint replacements, and that's seemingly the norm, and it's happening younger and younger. And my contention is, if we would only know how to manage the inflammation, we wouldn't need the joint repair. And like I said, that's just a tease for, you know, a future topic. But as far as, you know, on the exercise thing with cholesterol, you know, exercise is body movement. And a lot of times people feel, well, you know, if I don't use my legs as much, you know, then I won't wear out my knees or wear out my hips. And that's really not the case. That's all part of keeping the body moving. But, you know, the element that they might be experiencing in pain is a degree of inflammation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, arthritis, anytime you see itis at the end of any medical word, it means inflammation. And so arthritis just literally means inflammation in the joints. I mean, that's how stupid medicine is, but it just takes two literal terms and fuses them together. So anytime you get itis at the end of a word, it means inflammation. And so you know right there if you have chronic inflammation or not. Yeah, right. And so with joint pain, what's the best way to alleviate joint pain? It's to exercise. People with arthritis, a keynote symptom is that it actually improves with movement. So if you're feeling stiff when you wake up from the bed or get up from the chair, that's because you haven't moved enough. You have to keep moving and you'll feel better. Same with fibromyalgia. So a lot of pain actually, unless you've actually, you know, ruptured your Achilles tendon or broken your leg, in those cases you don't want to move it until it's healed. But in the case of any inflammatory condition or even any chronic pain condition, the best thing to do is to move, because when you're moving, you're actually bringing circulation. You're actually moving your blood. You're actually generating positive hormones that not only relieve pain, endorphins and enkephalins naturally relieve pain. These are natural opiates that your body produces. You don't have to take, morphine. And so if you're just moving around, your body's producing those hormones on its own and increasing circulation, depositing oxygen, healing the tissue and repair. So that movement is actually extremely beneficial. And that has to do with cholesterol as well, because the more you move, the more your blood circulates. You know, your heart already pumps, 60 beats a minute. The more your heart pumps, if it's fed up and it's beating 100 beats per minute, then it means your blood's going around your body 100 times as opposed to 60 times, and this is beneficial for healing, and this is beneficial for depositing your cholesterol, this is beneficial for your liver releasing and making bile, it's beneficial for your body making brain cells and new cell membranes. So it's amazing the machine that the body is, and if we keep it all in perspective, instead of isolating the different fragments or different components, then we're doing a lot more towards wellness. And that is holism. That's what holistic medicine is all about.
Yeah, like Dr. Miller was just saying a few minutes ago, in different populations of the world, how they have longevity and they don't have the diseases we see here in the United States or more in the industrialized, you know, worlds and such. There's reasons for that. And we'll probably run out of time here shortly in a topic we didn't talk about. And there again, it could be a future situation is statins. You know, statins and cholesterol really play together in today's world because a lot of people use them as a Band-Aid to try to hedge off of things. But I think if we make good choices and focus on body balance, it's a win-win.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just quickly with statins, you know, do save lives in people who already have heart disease. If you've already had a heart attack and you have high cholesterol, a lot of inflammation in the arteries, then statins do help those people. But to use statins in young people or preventatively or to reduce risk factors, they don't necessarily do that. And we're really barking up the wrong tree because statins have so many side effects. And the younger you start taking statins, the more likely you are to develop diabetes, Alzheimer's later in life, cataracts, as Ron mentioned, and have a poor liver health. And so elevated liver enzymes is actually the most common side effect of statin medications, followed by fibromyalgia-type pain, so pain and fatigue, which really reduce the quality of life. So overall, I would say statins reduce the quality of life, which is not what you want.
No, and that's it as far as on one breath, I think everybody wants to have a perfect the perfect world. You know, they want the wellness. They want feeling good. But, you know, we got to focus on our choices, you know, and good choices generally have good outcomes. Bad choices generally have bad outcomes, whether we like it or not.
In a nutshell, Ron, it's been my pleasure.
You betcha, Doctor. Many thanks for your time. And if anybody wants to follow us, I know definitely on MillieSays.com for help and support or stop by the farm market. We'd be more than glad to help where we can.
Till next time.
Yep. Thanks a lot, Doctor. Have a good day.
You too, Ron. Bye.